Wendy's mother and guide, it would be good if we did the Medicine Buddha practice as a way of sending her off into her future life in hopes that she will be born in the Medicine Buddha's Pure Land. I find what often happens is people come and listen to teachings, but then when somebody in their family dies, all of a sudden they don't know what to do. And they call me and say, what do I do? I thought, well, I've been teaching that the whole time you've been coming to classes. So I thought that, you know, this is, it's interesting. It's kind of like her mother's gift to us to get us to do some practice so we all get trained in what to do when our dear ones die. And it's a way to help Wendy's mother, because especially right after somebody dies, you know, in that first week, it's very good to do a lot of practice. And then on the seventh day, you know, each seventh day, counting the day that they died as the first day, and then counting 7, 14, 21, up until you get to 49. And each of those days, it's also very good to do a lot of practice for the person who's deceased, because if they haven't already taken a new rebirth, then they go through what's called a mini-death on that seventh day and take another intermediate stage body, you know, until, you know, finally by 49 days, they've definitely taken a new rebirth. You know, why it's 7 weeks and not six and not eight, that's the max, I don't know, okay? So it's very good if we know how to do this and what to do. Okay, because for sure, you know, we're going to die and the people we know are going to die. So this meditation is not going to be something that you'll put on a bookshelf unused. Guaranteed you will use this. Okay. Also, when somebody passes away, it's very good in general to make a lot of offerings on their behalf. You can offer their possessions either to the poor and needy or to the Buddha Dharma Sangha. And what that does is, because you're practicing generosity, you're creating a lot of positive potential. And because it's their things, they get a share in it. And also because you're dedicating for them. Okay? So it's a way, again, of increasing the person's positive potential as well as your own. It's also helpful to recite the King of Prayers. That's in the Red Prayer Book. That's a very good one to do if somebody's sick or if somebody has passed away. The first two pages of that is like a long version of the seven-limb prayer. So it's specifically for purifying and accumulating positive potential. And then the rest of the prayer is like a long dedication prayer. And it's very inspiring when you think about it. So that's good to do with illness or death. When somebody you know is dying, if you happen to be there, you know, at the time, try and have the room to be as quiet as possible. You know, in other words, turn the television off, get all the crying, sobbing relatives somewhere else. You know, try and make it as quiet and peaceful as possible. Encourage the person to think about things that, according to their own spiritual faith. Okay, so you never try and convert somebody at the last moment. Yeah. I say this because when I lived in Singapore, one of my students was dying. And at the very end, he was in the hospital and the doctor was trying to convert him. And my student was saying, don't make me confused. Can you imagine trying to die and saying that at the same time? And I went up to the doctor afterwards and I said, "What were you doing?" Because I knew what he was doing. And he said, "I'm trying to lead him to the right path." And I said, "Do you think that was really skillful to do?" And then I wrote a letter to the newspaper and to the Ministry of Health. And I said, "Is this acceptable behavior in on the part of a medical professional in a society that has freedom of religion?" I just put it as a question. It created a big hoopla in the newspaper, and it got the Ministry of Health to say, "No, this is not acceptable." Yeah? And so, you know, even though we may be Buddhists, if you have a family member who's of another faith, talk to them in terms of what they have faith in. Because the important thing when somebody dies is that they have a mind of faith and a happy mind, okay? That they don't feel kind of desperate and abandoned at the end, but they have some kind of belief that soothes their own mind. If they don't have any belief at all, for all you religious atheists, then what you do is you just talk about loving kindness. And you talk about compassion, because, you know, I mean, that isn't religious at all, and yet it's really the essence of all religions. And so you just talk to a person about having a kind heart, you know, and, you know, in the weeks before they die, try and get them to forgive who they need to forgive and apologize who they need to apologize to and tell they love who they need to tell they love. Yeah? And then at the time that they're dying, just to, you know, remind them of having this loving mind for all the people that they knew here, and to think that whatever happens after death, you know, just leave it wide open if it's not somebody who's Buddhist. Whatever happens after death, may they be able to share their love and compassion with whoever they meet. And have them die within that frame of mind, having a really positive attitude, feeling like they have some love and kindness and compassion that they can give to others. Okay? It can also be very helpful if you're taking care of somebody who's ill, for you to do mantra, you know, when you're there. If somebody's in coma, you can do it out loud. If somebody's a Buddhist, you can do it out loud. If they're not a Buddhist, you know, see what the situation is. Sometimes you're just sitting there saying mantra quietly to yourself, sets a very good vibration in the room. Yeah, one of my friends in Spain told me that. His father was quite a religious Catholic, but when his father was in the hospital, he would go and do his Vajrasattva practice in the hospital room, silently. But his father knew he was doing something. And afterwards, his father said, "Oh, that was so nice. It made me feel very peaceful." Okay? But don't do anything that antagonizes the other person. Okay? So also, you know, don't bring up things from the past that might be antagonistic to them or things that could cause them a lot of attachment. Yeah? Also, don't worry about whether you're there at the time that the person dies or not. Because very often it's much easier for the person to die when all their loved ones are not there. Okay, Rebecca, who is a hospice nurse, is nodding her head in agreement. Yeah? And you see this over and over and over again, because when your loved ones are there, sometimes it's hard for the person to die. Yeah? So don't feel that because you weren't there, you didn't do everything you could. Sometimes you did more than you could, and you're giving the person the opportunity to go in a way that feels comfortable to them. I see a number of people who after, you know, somebody dies, says, "Oh, if only I were there, you know, I should have been there." They feel so guilty. But it's almost as if they feel like they can prevent somebody from dying. Like their presence there would keep that person from dying. That's not possible, is it? You know? I mean, nobody can prevent somebody from dying. Even Buddha can't make somebody die, not die. So how are we going to do it? Yeah. So let go of any kind of guilt, because it's just stuff fabricated by the mind that's totally unnecessary. What's really important to do is, while people are alive, clear your relationships with them and tell them that you love them. Okay, that's the best way to help them in the dying process. If we, from our side, take responsibility, and if there's a funny feeling with somebody, to try as much as possible to clear it. Now, first of all, we have to clear it in our own hearts. And that's what we're doing a lot on this retreat, you know, with the various purification practices we do, the various things of counteracting our own anger and our attachment. It's very much a way for us to balance out our own emotions. Then, having balanced ourselves, if the external situation is such that we can go to the other person and say something or write them a letter, then it's very good for us to do that. In other words, don't wait until they're dying. Yeah, but clear it now as much as you can. If you can't talk to them directly because maybe it's too painful for them or still a little bit touchy for you, write them a letter, you know, and just say, you know, say what you need to say. And also, from our side, as much as possible, to forgive the people that we need to forgive, so that when we die, we can die peacefully. And if somebody ever talks to us or writes us apologizing for what they did, to definitely forgive them. You know, I mean, actually, forgiveness is our letting go of anger. You know, it's not like we do somebody a favor when we forgive them. And we should forgive them even before they apologize and not think, oh, I have to wait for them to apologize before I forgive. We should forgive, you know, in our hearts already. But whenever somebody, you know, directly asks, you know, apologizes to you, then, you know, make sure you let them know that from your side it's completely clear. Yeah, and especially if somebody has a terminal diagnosis. Actually, we all have terminal diagnoses, don't we? Somebody said, birth is the sexually transmitted terminal disease. Yeah. As soon as we're born, we have a terminal diagnosis. So, you know, as much as possible to, you know, express our kindness to other people who ask for our forgiveness, so that we don't go through our life with a lot of residual stuff, and we help people as much as possible so they don't have to go through their life with it. But we also recognize that we can't control other people. Yeah. And so that's why the basic thing is for us to balance our own mind and feel peaceful with the other person in our own mind, even though if we can't necessarily do that in the external relationship, because we can't control what happens to the other person. Okay. But, you know, like I said, as much as possible to do this while we're alive and not wait until somebody dies. One of my Dharma friends, we did the Vajrasattva retreat together in 77. He's, you know, a couple of decades older than me. He was estranged from his daughter for many, many years. And a couple of years ago, he went down to L.A. and saw her for the first time in a long time. And they kind of established contact. And then about a month after that, somebody found him dead at his house. He had just died of natural causes or whatever. And he hadn't been sick before. But we all thought, wow, wasn't that incredible that before he died, he was able to reestablish contact with his daughter. You know, it was good for him, and it was incredible for the daughter. Because can you imagine from her side how she would have felt having her father die, you know, with this kind of feeling between them? Okay? So, That's one way to benefit the people that we live, that we love. Another way is, as much as possible, to encourage them to do positive actions when they're alive and to not get them involved in negative actions. Okay, that doesn't mean we need to preach karma at the dinner table. Okay, but we don't ask our family members to lie on our behalf. Okay, we don't get them involved in, you know, talking behind the back about somebody else, another family member. You know, as much as possible, especially the people we love, we try and keep our own speech clean, clear, so that we don't generate negativities in them. And we don't ask them to get involved in our own defective practices. Yeah, so if you're a habitual gambler, don't drag in all your relatives. Yeah. And then as much as possible, you know, encourage them to be generous and encourage that kind side of them and give them good feedback when they do something kind so that you encourage them in that way. And that's a very good way to help them. So instead of, you know, just always picking at our family members and telling them their faults, to really encourage them when they do kind things. And then I think it's also important to tell the people we love that we love them. Yeah? Now, of course, as much as possible, you want to separate out your attachment and your love, which isn't always such an easy thing to do, is it? Yeah, it's not so easy. But, you know, we should try as much as possible to tell the people we're fond of that we're fond of them. And I say this because I remember one time going to a Stephen Levine workshop in Seattle, and he has these microphones throughout the audience, and all these people get up and they tell their incredibly sorrowful stories about, you know, somebody dying. And I noticed so often, you know, the person was pouring out to this room of 500 strangers how much they love the person who died. But we're not the ones who needed to hear that. It was the person who died who needed to hear that, and they never told them. And because they never told them, then they have to tell a room full of strangers. Yeah. So it's very important for us, instead of being proud and arrogant and, you know, to really say thank you to the people we need to say thank you to, you know, especially our parents. I think that's very important. You know? So whatever happened with your parents, you know, there's been a lot of kindness there, and to express that to them before they pass away and thank them for everything that they did. Yeah? And even they shoot back, who knows what kind of remark at you? That doesn't matter. Yeah. What matters is that in your heart you were able to say it and say it from your heart. Okay? Or write them a letter. Yeah. But that's very, very important to do. And who was it? Somebody was telling me one time that they had a letter like that from a relative. And they kept it by their nightstand when they were really ill. And they kept reading the letter over and over again. Yeah? And Wendy had called, can I tell? She had called her mother before she came on the retreat and left a phone message, you know, telling her mother how much she loved her. And I said to Wendy last night, I bet you her mother replayed that message many times. Yeah? And so that kind of thing is very, very important to do. You know, we just let people know so that there's that good feeling, and then when somebody dies, everything's, you know, it's clean, clear. Yeah? There's no hooks in there. So now we can all cry. At least I will. Okay? And then, like I said, afterwards, you know, make offerings and do these kinds of practices. It's very good. Also, I think, as much as you can, and this isn't always possible, to talk with our parents or other family members about end-of-life issues, living wills and all this other kind of stuff, and talk about that. I've tried to with my parents. It ends after about one sentence, They're not ready to do it. Yeah, but I think it's worth a try as much as you can. And also from our side, those of you who have kids, or even those of you who don't, the other people who are going to be handling things, to try and make your wishes known to them, so that you don't put them in any kind of awkward position. And if you want certain kind of religious services done or whatever, write that down. Put that in a will. Put it in a living will also. So do any of you know Terry? He was one of the early DFF members. Nobody? Yeah, he was, in 1989 when I first came to Seattle. And he died in the early 90s. And he died on Pill Hill in Seattle. I can't remember which hospital now. And he had... he had it written, because he was also a doctor, written in his chart not to touch his body after he died. And he had it written, because he had talked with me before, that he wanted Buddhist prayers and practices. His family was Catholic, so he told his family, it's fine, you can do something, but out in the other room. And I want my Buddhist friends to come in here. He had the whole thing settled with his family beforehand. So it was very, very easy. Yeah. And he had let everybody know what he wanted and respected it. So I think, as much as we can do that, even within a family, if different people have different religions, you can still communicate with them, beforehand, and have things written down, so that at the time, there doesn't have to be indecision or friction about the whole thing. Well, they say the best amount of time is 3 days, if possible, to allow the consciousness to actually leave the body. But even in the Tibetan community, they don't always do that. And very often the consciousness leaves the body before 3 days. Yeah. So as long as you can possibly do that, that's good. In his case, he died in the hospital. He was able, in negotiating with the hospital beforehand, have them leave his body for 12 hours. And then the mortuary people were late, so it wound up being a little bit longer. Yeah. But that at least gives the consciousness some more tranquil time to leave. And what's good to do is, after somebody dies, don't touch the body, immediately. And when the body is first touched, touch it on the crown, pull a little bit of somebody's hair, and say, go to the Pure Land. Because, the Pure Lands are places where you can practice without obstacles and gain realizations very easily. And if somebody's consciousness is able to leave via the crown of their head, it's very auspicious for having a good rebirth. So when the body's first touched, touch it there, to try and draw the consciousness out there. And then say, be born in the Pure Land, or take a precious human rebirth. Okay? And then also when you dedicate for the person afterwards, when you do your practices, pray for them to have a good rebirth, either a precious human rebirth or to be reborn in the Pure Land. And you can pray for this whether somebody's Buddhist or not. Okay? So it isn't like if they're Christian, you pray for them to be born in heaven, and if they're Buddhist, you pray for them. Yeah, okay, but you can pray for them to be born in the Pure Land. And then pray, may they have each and every conducive condition necessary to practice the Dharma. So may they have access to perfectly qualified Mahayana and Tantrayana teachers. May they have access to all the materials they need and the supportive community. May they have a good environment. May everything they need for their spiritual practice be there. And from their own side, may they have this wish to practice. And then pray, you know, may they generate the three principal aspects of the path. May they especially, you know, generate bodhicitta as quickly as possible. May they attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. So everything that's in your heart that you wish good for the person, express it in those dedication prayers. Yeah? And if you know the person had a certain problem about this and that, you know, when they're in the intermediate state, may they be free of fear, may they be free of anxiety, you know, whatever it is. Make those kinds of prayers for the person. And even if it's been more than 49 days since somebody's died, you know, whatever, wherever they're born, you can still pray that they have a good rebirth and are able to meet the Dharma. Okay? So this is a way of, you know, actually helping the people who are deceased go on their way in a peaceful way, you know, so we can actually do something beneficial for them. Okay?